This is Pure Decking for Thursday, May the 31st, whatever the year is. I've lost track. This is show number 307 about the
User
stuff.
User joined your channel.
And we have a madman joining the show. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like information security, pointing out how rigged the game is, and remembering that I forgot to write a new joke for the intro there. It still has the thing about starting with yourself if you think the world has a population problem. I'm Morps. Tonight I'm drinking the last of my Eagle Rare. And tonight we have Sard. Sard, what are you drinking?
I've got a Blue Moon.
Cool. And Madman.
Yeah.
Madman, what do you have?
I've got a Flat Tire Amber Ale.
I'm glad you finished that sentence. I thought something was wrong with your car over there for a second.
Yeah, that sucks. But on the bright side, I have a new jack that's only been used once.
Oh, well,
and
there
not
you go.
By me.
Oh, shit. I have had a hell of a day. I've had a hell of a month, actually. So I am sorry about the lack of shows lately. I got sick a couple weeks ago, and then my job. I thought I was going to end up having to get on a call again tonight. It hasn't gone well the last couple of weeks with the whole work-life balance thing. So I am sorry about that, but it's unavoidable. To the point I was thinking it might be time to move the show to the weekend or something, because it's getting kind of hard to do things Thursday nights. It's like, you know, we picked Thursday night because it was supposed to not be all that busy, but it's getting rather crowded.
You also picked Thursday night how many years ago now? Schedules change.
Oh, God. How long have we been doing this show? When did I post the first one? I can go on the website and actually find that out.
I'm not sure, but I'm also fairly certain they weren't always on Thursdays.
No, they weren't. We used to do 2 a week. We did 2 a week for, like, I don't know, 2 weeks. So... Cycross thinks 2010.
Must be like 10 years. At least 10 years by now.
I don't think it's that long. Do you think it's that long? Let's see.
Well, if you forget jokes, we can always pull up Roseanne Barr's Twitter feed and
read
off of there.
Yeah,
just remember, ABC will not air you.
You know,
afterwards.
Somehow, I haven't thought that'd be a problem lately. Full archives of shows here. Here we go. Category 3 on the WordPress site is where the old archives are. Good Lord, that's old. March 22nd, 2011 was when we actually started decking. Yeah, because we were doing IHN between, you know, when Newsreel was running right up to when that ended, and then we did IHN and decking side by side for a year or so.
Yeah.
Something like that?
That sounds about right, yeah.
So, 2011, jeez, we've been doing this shit for 7 years.
Yeah.
Why? Why can't I stop? Why am I still doing this to myself? Oh, shit. Anyways, jeez. Actually, March 22nd. So, yeah, it's been almost exactly 7 years. Yeah, 7 years.
Yeah.
Jeez.
That's pretty sweet.
Working on 8.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. So, but I am sorry about the lack of shows lately. Although with the stuff going on my job right now, I may have to actually put the show on hiatus for a bit just to deal. Hopefully not. Maybe not. But, I don't want to mention it on the show, but I know I haven't spoken to Madman, so Madman, I'm just going to message you. Just you'll be able to understand very quickly. why my job has been so shit lately. Anyways, so moving on, I'll just let Madman look that up. And
good news, job security, Morps. Job security.
You think?
For you, yes. For other people, maybe not. But you, you've got a job.
did you look?
I'm Googling right now, but when you said what to do, I'm like, yeah, that's going to suck. No matter what comes up, it's going to come up big flaming pile of suck.
Kind of. I mean, you know, you just got to look for today. It's fine. Anyways, so moving on, the first article and lead article I have for today, FBI has told everybody to reboot their routers. your router's part of a botnet.
I've seen that everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that just silly?
Not really, actually. Depends on the malware that's out there, because some of them only do an in-memory infection. Now, granted, the moment the router comes back online, it's just going to get reinfected, but they could potentially, if they have enough of them, reset at once, start seeing where these things are actually coming from, or even maybe identify enough of a pattern to do something about it. So anyways, I've got Popular Mechanics article on it here because they had some good advice. Last week, the FBI sent out a warning. Reboot your router because a dangerous piece of malware, VPN filter, has compromised hundreds of thousands of them. If you did that, good. If not, do it now! Do it! Do it now! No, I'm doing a show. If I reboot with the router now, we'll lose it. But if you really want to go through, be rid of CyberScourge, you'll have to go a little further and reset your device to its factory settings. VPN filter is a nasty little bugger that could spy on your internal or internet traffic, or even worse, brick your router. Before it can do any of that, it has to load itself up. The malware comes in three stages. Stage 1 infects the router and lays the foundation for the funny business. Once established, Stage 1 finds and downloads Stage 2, which is the real meat of the problem. Stage 2 is the software engine that can start messing around with and slurping up all of your data, so your router's actually running third-party code. Includes browser history, usernames, password, basically anything that goes to the router. Stage 3 is icing on the cake. It comes in various forms that modify the capabilities of the main hacking engine. In an announcement on Friday, the FBI recommended rebooting your router. That's smart, but it only removes stages 2 and 3 and leaves stage 1 still on the router so that it can just, you know, reinfect itself. I would actually recommend, beyond doing the factory reset, going and checking and see if there's updates for your router. Hopefully some of the manufacturers have patched this shit. Also, common things to check, make sure that you've actually put a password on your router. A lot of times they just go for the default. Also, make sure that the web interface is set to only allow it from inside the network, not from the internet. Routers call it different things, but primarily you want to make sure that you can only administer the router from inside, not from the internet, because if you can do it from the internet, so can everybody else. And routers' built-in security, especially on their web interfaces, is not exactly bulletproof. Usually they're just using JavaScript to hide the admin functions and shit like that. So, yeah. But yeah, I would almost say go ahead and find the current firmware for your router and reflash it anyways, but I'm almost afraid to give that advice out, because if you don't know what you're doing flashing a router, you could brick it. So, not that it's that hard. Usually it's just go find the thing and upload the firmware to it, but
yeah,
you know how that goes.
Yep.
But the FBI recommends any owners of small office and home office routers reboot the devices to temporarily disrupt the malware and aid the potential identification of the infected devices. By rebooting our routers en masse, we are not only forcing the infected ones to identify themselves by calling out to their masters for a redownload of stages 1 and 2, but also lighting up the distribution network, which will work to overdrive and deliver all these packages at once. It's a smart strategy, especially if the API can solve the root problem, but in the meantime, your router might remain infected, and there's no good way to check. So next, they've got a walkthrough in the article here of doing a factory reset, and this is going to vary from router to router, but primarily, you're going to go into like 192.168.1.1 or whatever your router is. You'll go into the admin settings, and usually under advanced, there'll be a reset and then a factory reset, but I think the better thing to do is go check for updates and get a fresh copy of the firmware and then hard load that on there. Because if the firmware is compromised, and I will say most router malware does not reflash the firmware. They fuck with your settings. They will download and run code, but they usually don't flash the firmware because even though a lot of these routers are based off the same software packages, individual routers still need their own customized firmware or they won't work. So if most of this malware, if it tries to actually put a rooted firmware on your device and you don't actually have the device it thinks you do, it just bricked your router. So since what they want to do is use your router as a botnet, they don't want to just brick them all in mass. They usually don't try to take that step.
They don't want end user to notice.
Yeah.
So that they go and reset the router.
Exactly.
Do preventative measure.
Or buy a new one that's not vulnerable. Yeah.
Yeah.
So generally, yeah, it's better to, you know, wipe out the settings completely and get an update from the manufacturer and, you know, really go in and make sure that you can't do any administration of that router from the internet. Now, that's not going to be perfect because a lot of these routers just don't get updated very often and don't have good security in the first place.
Right. I mean, you have an old router from probably even more than 5 years ago. It's probably not getting firmware updates anymore.
Well, at some point, a lot of these routers, you can put like Tomato or DDWRT on them, and those usually are a lot more secure than the factory firmware. The other thing I've had good luck doing is grabbing an old box and throwing, you know, PFSense or...
That's what I was going to suggest.
Yeah.
Ian, or IPCOP, any of those.
What was it? Linux Router Project was another one, I think? Or is that old? I don't know. There's a bunch of them out
I don't
there.
Know. That vaguely sounds familiar, but it reminds me of PFSense.
The PFSense had a fork, too. That was
maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what that was called. But anyways, IPCOP, PFSense, those are definitely good options. Sophos has one too that you can download for free, but I had a lot of problems with it, so I wouldn't really recommend it. But its security is probably pretty good. So I had functionality
much
problems
better
with
than
it.
A little ARM based home router or whatever. I mean, you have an actual box stand up. You have some actual horsepower behind it. You can do a lot of different things. IPS, IDS.
I don't know, dude. Some of the higher end routers have got some horsepower on them. Mine's a quad core. My router is a fucking quad core.
Oh, really?
It's an ARM, but I mean, it's just got a good chip in it.
Okay. I haven't been looking at that stuff in years and years since I switched over to Endian. At first it was IPCOP and I switched to Endian, but never looked back.
Yeah. No, you get into the right gear, man. You look at those little rinky-dink boxes and go, fucking really?
Yeah. They crammed all that onto there? That's cool. I was going to ask you, so with this whole FBI saying that they're going to, you know, reboot your router and all that, have you seen some of the conspiracy theories around it?
No, but I bet they're fantastic.
Oh, yes. I was listening. I forget what podcast it was. I was listening to some podcast, and they started going into it about people were saying that maybe, you know, they want you to reboot your router or whatever because the FBI has already owned it, and they want to install a different type of malware, and like how... so the FBI over the botnet command and control domain that variant of malware
they've installed an update
control traffic comes from. Yeah, so they were like wanting to people to reboot to install an update or something like that. There's also another one where
they pushed an update to their malware. They need you to restart to imply the update's like a Windows box.
And then so the FBI is going to start using your computer and your router as part of their botnet. And then it was also they were talking about the legality of, okay, so what if, you know, they have all these IPs talking back to this domain that they own now, and then they figure out, okay, it's someone that they want to investigate or something, how easy it would be to go to a judge and say, hey, we already have this person's router owned. We're going to want to go in and sniff all their traffic and all the stuff around. Well, the FBI is just going to use it as their own giant botnet.
Well, you know, we say that like they're funny conspiracy theories, but they're actually not without merit. Because you remember a couple of years ago, the FBI took over a kiddie porn website on Tor, and they kept running it for months to catch people.
Right. And they use,
So, I mean, it's not they're not exactly without precedent on the conspiracy theory there.
Right.
On that one, you had to actually go to the kiddie porn site. Running a botnet that's self-infecting, that might be a bit of a different thing.
Well, that or they're taking over somebody else's existing botnet. But yeah, you're right.
Well,
it
I
is
mean,
different.
That's essentially what they're doing. So what if they stop the ability for it to propagate and to expand on, but they still keep all the active connected nodes to it, you know, still there and not, you know, not black holing that traffic and then just use it for their own purposes.
If they had their way, that you'd be if they had their way, you'd be required to install their watch software, their malware on your computer. So you never know. I mean, seriously, they've been lobbying technology companies for years trying to get backdoors mandatory installed.
Yeah, so. Or backdoors into encryption, mm-hmm. of course, which we've talked about before, which is a frightening idea.
Well, considering you have to break encryption to do that, or at least break key storage.
Yeah, exactly. That's the freaking opposite of what encryption's supposed to do.
So,
anyways.
Next article is from express.co.uk and is a classic example of government. The European Commission has insisted the new data protection law, which has swept through the continent, does not apply to them. You know, the people who passed the law. Officials in Brussels have argued, despite the design of the rules, that they do not have to follow them for legal reasons. In other words, they they can't even comply with their own regs. You know, after all this bullshit and everybody and their brother sending you updated privacy terms. The bombshell revelation follows an embarrassing leak of personal details of hundreds of citizens by the European Commission. The leak would normally constitute a breach of the General Data Protection Regulation if other organizations had done it themselves. However, a spokesperson of the Commission said, based on legal reasons, European institutions are separate from the GDPR. Instead, officials will follow a new law similar to the GDPR, but does not come into effect until autumn. The European Commission published more than 700 records that include name, professions, and addresses. Furthermore, specific postcodes and addresses of Britons can be found by searching the official EU website using Google. I guess that's their payback for Brexit. The tech site Indivigital first spotted the documents, which are only part of thousands of Microsoft Excel spreadsheets that can be found easily online. Oh, they're Google dorking it. That's awesome. The documents were uploaded from 2013 by various EU Commission department officials and were hosted by the website europa.eu. A spokesman said the European Commission was taking and will continue to take all the necessary steps to comply. The GDPR is a new EU law which came into effect last week and restricts how companies and organizations use personal information of European citizens. Organizations were given until May 25th to make changes to how they process and store personal information. The burden of compliance led to many businesses scrambling to meet the deadline or else they would pay fines up to 17.5 million pounds or 20 million euros.
When did GDPR first get announced and all that? Like, how much lead time did they have?
It's been floating around. Jeez, I've been hearing about it for at least 6 months. I want to say a year that it's been out there in some form or another, but I don't think it was finalized until, I want to say like 6 months ago, give or take. I'm spitballing. We probably should Google it to get a real answer, or Bing. You can go use Bing. I don't care. Use DuckDuckGo. Use a search engine. I'm also enjoying the screenshot there of a Lenovo running what looks to be the Enlightenment desktop. That's rare to see the Enlightenment desktop on anything, let alone a UK article. So
yeah, I see that. That's pretty cool.
I suppose that could be like a heavily customized XFCE or maybe even LXDE, but that looks like Enlightenment to me.
One of those. I don't know. It kind of reminded me. Oh, what was that? Damn Small Linux? I think that bar was at the top, though, if I remember correctly.
That could be Damn Small Linux. Or a variant of it, yeah. It does kind of have that same... Yeah, because I think it had a bar
though
like
I just
that.
Looked it up. GDPR, the initial proposal was in 2012. Adoption in 2016... and Berkeley. So it looks like they had like 2 years.
Yeah, but nobody was making a big deal out of it until recently.
Yeah, yeah. So they waited for 2 years. And even now they're trying to say that we made this to make the rest of the world compliant, but it doesn't apply to us.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, even American corporations are like, well, we could get fined by the EU, which kind of raises some questions there. Yeah. It's like, how does that work? I mean, if you don't have any offices outside of the States, right? Like,
right.
Like if Galaxy 15 took I don't know, a forum or something where people could set up, you know, it's not hosted, it's hosted in the States, it's all, everyone who does any administrative work is in the States. I don't think anybody from the EU regularly logs into the servers anymore. We used to have a few. But, of course, I don't save data on anybody. I mean, they could come at us and be like, hey, you owe us for fines, but they'd be hard to enforce, wouldn't it?
Well, what would happen is we would get a complaint. I would ask you to send the actual copy to me so that I could masturbate over it.
Okay.
And that's as far as it would go. I would just get a chubby off of legal documents, and we would do nothing because it's not illegal here. It's the whole Pirate Bay argument. It's not illegal where I live. You can't make laws for where I live. I don't live in your jurisdiction.
So, a data protection expert at law firm Mishkandi Roya told the Daily Telegraph about the irony of the situation. Joe Baines said, although the information disclosed here does not appear to be particularly sensitive, it does raise questions about the general level of competence and whether any further inadvertent disclosures may have been made. Steve Gailey, a security expert with Exabeam, said the leak was embarrassing for the EU, coming hot off the heels of the GDPR. So, if anybody's wondering, that GDPR is why you've gotten a blue billion emails about everybody and their brother updating their privacy policy.
I would advise not to vacation in the EU until after they forget that we exist, and we're not opening up an office there either. Now, the
considering we haven't opened up an office here either.
We could open up an office in one of the former Soviet bloc countries just for access to EU, because it's, you know, jumping the border, kind of like having an office in Michigan to, you know, go deal with Canadians.
That's awesome. So, but yeah, I know a lot of corporations were worried about it, so it's just one of these things where it's like, actually, I saw a lot of them looking into software, and there were a great number of posts and different searches on some of the different tech forums. Hey, we've been told to just block all EU, everybody from the EU.
That's an easy way of doing it.
But it's like, well, we're never going to be able to comply with what they're asking, so we're just going to block them.
Yeah. How come most people where these companies, like you said, you know, aren't doing the whole, well, it's not illegal here, you can suck my dick, I'm the Pirate Bay.
Well, a lot of them do business in Europe.
If they do business in Europe, they can seize assets from them. Like, General Motors actually has factories in Europe. They do business in Europe. So they can't really say, fuck off and die, because the European Union can say, oh, well, these how many ever acres worth of crap you have, guess who owns that now? The answer's not you.
Yeah, okay.
Or let's say you don't have assets there, but you administrate a network for a hospital. That can happen. You can't do business with that hospital anymore because you're not complying with EU law.
Right,
the only reason
on
we
the
can say fuck off
like
is we don't have any business ties. There's nothing they can do to us. We're judgment proof.
Well, technically, we don't have any business at all. So it's like we don't make any money off this. So,
didn't you read anything about Starbucks? You don't have to make money to be a business or have customers. Those are just words that mean nothing.
Crushing, crushing, crushing. I don't want to be fed to a wood chipper.
So, I don't want to be turned gay by frogs.
Emergency.
Wait, I thought they were turning the frogs gay. What do you mean turned gay by the frogs? This is a new development.
I eat those things. What if the chemicals work their way up the food chain?
He eats. You all heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen. Madman eats gay frogs.
I don't ask their orientation. I mean, it's not like I'm gigging them while they're having sex. They could be gay. They could be straight. I eat frogs. And if there's gay frogs turned gay by whatever chemical, that's being introduced to me. Now, I haven't had a Woody over Woody's yet, but I don't want it to happen.
So now here's the question. Here's the real question. Do we make the joke about telling the French to stay away from where Madman lives?
Oh, they're already faggots. They're not going to get any gayer. I mean, they fart sparklies.
Oh, I wasn't talking about that. I was making a cannibalism joke.
Oh, eating the frogs. Okay, yeah, I get that.
God.
Really slowly got that.
It wasn't homophobic. It was just dark. I mean, come on, man. Anyways. Next article is from the Next Web, and it's kind of a no-duh, but it's always fun to point out. It isn't unusual to find companies using deceptive practices when trying to market and grow their brands. One niche where this is very rife is in the VPN industry. It was recently revealed that, contrary to the claims of their websites, 26 of the 117 most popular VPN services log user data, despite touting contrary claims on their marketing. They're mostly talking about like PureVPN and a few others that got caught doing this. That revelation will seem tame compared to the findings of how free VPNs operate, mainly openly and brazenly sharing and selling user data. Now that new GDPR laws are enforceable, more attention is being focused on how organizations use user data for marketing purposes. When it comes to data abuse, however, VPN service providers, particularly the free VPN services, are the biggest culprits. VPNs are generally regarded as more secure alternative to a regular ISP for anonymizing your internet traffic and unblocking blocked websites. Professionals use VPNs to block their identity online, but many VPN users wrongly assume that with a VPN, no one has access to their data. Unfortunately, this is not the case. Your VPN provider in place of your ISP could very well have access to all of your data. Depending on which service you use, a VPN could be worse than ordinarily just using your ISP. Ask Ryan Lynn, who was arrested late last year due to internet activities he carried out while apparently using secure VPN service. And I think that was pure VPN. While the VPN service he used boldly touted the fact that they do not keep logs, they had logs of Lynn's online activity to deliver to the FBI when it was requested of him or of them. In fact, in most cases, the fact that your data could be sold or shared is made clear on their privacy policy page, but most users don't actually bother to read it. Notable culprits include Hotspot Shield, Hola, and BetterNet. So all these services actually have it in their EULA that we're going to share and sell your data. If you use any form
free.
Of
free, what do these people expect?
Well, that's Sorry. The public service announcement, isn't it? If you're not paying for it, you're the product.
Exactly.
So, if you use any form of free VPN service, it is not only highly unlikely that you're being protected, but there's a huge possibility that your data is being harvested and sold to the highest bidder. To the unsuspecting user, providers of free VPN services are chivalrous knights in shining armor who understand the dangers of censorship and are trying to help, as many claim on their website. However, to the providers of the free VPN services, they've struck a profitable business model based on selling user data. So, let's see. Hotspot Shield, with over 500 million downloads of its VPN software. Hotspot Shield is not a new entrant to the VPN game. However, selling and sharing user data, hijacking user traffic, etc., is a regular business practice for them. In a petition to the FTC against Hotspot Shield by the Center for Democracy and Technology. Where do these centers come from? Is that just like a couple of guys with, you know, like an email address? Because we could totally create some of these lobbying groups and just, you know, flood places with bullshit and see if we can get into articles.
As long as we have really nice letter header, you know, it'll look legit.
We are the Institute for Fairness in Internet Porn. I don't know. Oh, fuck. Madman, you're better at that. Come up with something.
I'll work on that. I've just been kind of like, how the hell is internet porn unfair? I think I've seen midgets having sex with goats before. I mean, you can't get a more open market than
I was actually just trying to think of something that'd be really funny to see in print, but, you know.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't thinking of an actual problem. I mean,
VPNs, depending on what you're using it for, you're still getting everything you paid for. I might use a VPN to let me watch BBC shit for free, because I'm not in Britain, and they charge my ass for that.
So, yeah, apparently, so Hotspot Shield has apparently been accused of hijacking and redirecting user traffic to affiliate sites. There's complaints about the Android application collecting all kinds of information, including the IMEI number. So that's out there.
Yeah.
So the next one is...
It just does not surprise me at all. I cannot believe that...
No, it doesn't.
People would think, oh, yeah, free. I'm definitely, you know, they aren't selling my information.
I think it's more just they don't think about it. They're just so used to getting, like, free apps on the phone and shit.
I guess. Oh, I mean, even then, those could do that, too.
Oh, yeah.
They probably do. But how many people do you think about that?
Us.
Not enough.
Let's see. Number two, Hola. Hola is synonymous with unblocked Netflix for free, as was attested by the 152 million people who use the free VPN. But very few are aware that they've been caught turning the computers of users of their free VPN service into exit nodes, and that they actually have a paid business arm to which they sell bandwidth of their free VPN users. Damn! Wow. They actually resell their users' bandwidth. I mean, that's brazen right there. In 2015, a group of researchers discovered several issues in Hola. Besides allowing their users to be tracked across the internet, a bug was discovered that could be exploited to remotely run applications on computers of Hola users.
God. Oh, jeez.
Worse, Hola was selling off the bandwidth of users of their free service to people willing to pay through their Luminati business arm. In other words, while you were trying to use their free VPN to evade censorship and stay anonymous, a user of their paid service with criminal tendencies could use your IP to visit illegal sites that you have become responsible for. Hola will later fix some of these bugs and update their privacy policy to better reflect some of their practices, but the researchers maintain that some of these issues still exist.
No one's going to know crazy. That you're watching, I don't know, Netflix for free. But somebody's going to think you're watching child porn. That somebody could be the FBI.
Let's see. The third one is BetterNet. And blah, 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 blah. 14 tracking libraries in the Android app. That's all they really list about them. So, yeah, the article goes on to explain why they're doing that. And it's basically because they're trying to either offset their server costs so that they can actually operate, because it is a free service. They're trying to make money, and they're just greedy. So, you know, it's not really surprising, though. I mean, if something's free, they're getting something by running it, right? Now, if it's like an open source project, maybe the people building it just enjoy building it. But if it's something like a VPN where you've got constant servers running, you either need some idiot dumb enough to continue to pay for it, like I do with G15, and never make any money on the damn thing because it's a hobby. I never thought I should make money on it. You know, I'm well aware that this is just a cost, right? But it's also not that expensive because it's just us and a handful, and you know, all the downloads. It's not like running a VPN service. You know, so what are their alternatives here? Find an open source VPN. You still need something to host that, but I mean, you could totally take it like an open VPN or Freeland and like get maybe a DigitalOcean or something and run your own. Use the free VPN by the University of Tsubaka, Japan. Yeah, it's still a free VPN. They're using it for academic experiments and research, so your data could still be tracked. So, and set up your own free VPN. Well, if you're building it yourself, it ain't going to be free. Depending on the app you use, you might not get full anonymity. You can set up your own VPN using Algo or Streisand. These require you some tech savvy. Oh, they're talking about just running one from your house. So, I don't know. I don't like the idea that they're talking about finding open source ones and setting up your own, because that still doesn't protect you from your ISP. You still have to get on the internet. So,
yeah, from your own connection.
Yeah, I guess if you're like out and about and on your phone, though, it makes sense.
Sure.
So
VPN in back to home. That way, you can at least guarantee that your traffic is in a tunnel.
Yeah. Maybe get around like web filters and stuff like that.
Sure.
Next article is from OZY.com. and it's kind of long. So instead of reading it, I'm just going to summarize it. China is building robots to be policemen and putting tasers on them.
That's not RoboCop enough. I want Ed walking around with fucking missiles and twin 50 cals.
So part of the reason I don't want to read the article is that it's a paid. It's obviously an ad for some of the companies that are making this stuff. And they've got some notes in there about Human Rights Watch is voicing concern over the policing using robots. But the part I was laughing at was that robots had tasers. Because one of two things is going to happen. Either one, that thing's going to tase somebody it shouldn't. They're going to have a heart attack and die. And then who gets charged with murder? The robot or the people who programmed it? Or, you know, I mean, do they have an operator like a drone? Because it doesn't really go into detail. Kind of hints that it could be any of them. The other thing that could happen is you're going to have somebody tackle the robot from behind, rip the cameras and the tasers out of it, and go, ooh, parts to sell on eBay. So, because that's the downside of robot cops, right? Is somebody's going to tackle the damn thing from behind, rip those high-end cameras and processors and parts out of it, and sell them on eBay.
Right.
Hey, it'll be like monster hunting in RPGs, right? I need 10 camera lenses from these robots. I've just got an idea for MMO. I just got an idea for an MMO. All the fetch quests are like taking down the robotic enforcers and selling their parts on eBay. Oh, let's go for broke and make it for Bitcoin.
You could also expand it into the surveillance drones.
Oh, yeah, the cameras on those are nice. You know, that's the thing with these drones. I mean, the cameras on them are nice. You're going to have people shooting them down trying to get the parts. So, it's like, sir, we think you shot down our drones. How do you know that? The cameras went down with the drones. Oh, no, we saw you selling the parts on eBay. No, you didn't. I scraped all the ICNs off those things. Come on.
And why leave any of it behind? Make sure there's no GPS on the drone? Or, I don't know, throw it in a Faraday cage. What you don't sell on eBay gets taken to a recycling center.
I was thinking you could have more fun throwing the GPS tracker on, like, trucks or something from an overpass.
Oh, if you could track it as well, you could start sending postcards from the robot. It ran away. Get down to being a cop. Everyone was degrading it. It thought Black Lives mattered too and couldn't face the right people. Go full SJW robot. I ran away from home. Sent a postcard from Berkeley.
Some poor Chinese guy trying to figure out what the fuck. This next one is just funny. It's from Ars Technica. Actually, I think this one's like a... Yeah, this one's a little bit older, but I just thought it was hilarious. So, while the U.S. government is giving ISPs free rein to track their customers' internet usage for purposes of serving personalized advertisements, some internet users are demanding to are determined to fill their browsing history with junk so ISPs cannot discover their real browsing habits. Yeah, this is, you know, from about a month ago I guess 2 months ago now, when net neutrality was first struck down by the FCC and it had actually expired. So scripts and browser extensions might be able to fill your website history with random searches and site visits, but would this actually fool an ISP that scans your web traffic and steers it with advertising networks? Electronic Frontier Foundation senior staff technologist Jeremy Gatilla. Or there's no T there. Guilla. Feels like there should be a T in that guy's name. Somebody tell him he spelled his last name wrong because it's hard to say. Is skeptical but hopes that he's wrong. I'd love to be proven wrong about this, he told Ars. I'd like to see solid research showing how well these noise creation systems work on a large scale before I trust it. Steve Smith of Cambridge, Massachusetts, contacted Ars and Guilla after a recent article about how the U.S. Senate vote to eliminate ISP privacy rules affects users and what internet users can do to hide their browsing history. He's a subscriber to this browser pollution approach. Perhaps more constructively than using a VPN or Tor. Filling up your monthly bandwidth allotment with data pollution, Smoth wrote to us. You're already paying for the bandwidth, so use all of it if your ISP is going to sell your private data. This has the dual benefit of obscuring your actual browsing habits, and if enough people adopt the practice, discouraging ISPs from selling private data. I've written a Python class to do this for my household. It crawls for links it finds using random search words, and I have shared the code, he continued. Smith's code is available on GitHub. Internet users often have to worry about data caps, but Smith set the default rate for 50 gig a month, or about 5% of a 1 terabyte data cap. Well, that depends on the ISPs. A lot of them only have like a couple of gigabyte data cap or something like that, depending on what you're doing.
On phones, sure.
Oh, yeah. Well, and some Comcast subscribers only had a couple hundred gigabyte a month, too, so... so and it wasn't anywhere near a terabyte.
Oh, that sucks. Comcast sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a nasty gram from them for the year I was using Comcast before I moved. I got a nasty gram from them about every other month saying I was using too much bandwidth. And which was amusing because I wasn't really doing anything crazy hardcore like running servers and shit. So it's like, really? I'm using too much bandwidth just by the occasional Netflix and, you know, TeamSpeak? I mean, really? So.
Well, we've talked about that before. The whole argument is just bullshit.
Oh, yeah. Smith's ISP data pollution project isn't the only such effort. For instance, there's a project called Ruin My History that opens up a pop-up window that cycles through different websites in a browser plugin called Noisy, designed to create meaningless web data by visiting various websites. A big challenge for attempts to pollute browsing history is that computers are extremely good at finding patterns, even when the data you want to hide is surrounded by a huge number of random data points. This is the kind of problem that big data systems are built to solve. Guilla believes that the data pollution systems may not be sophisticated enough to fool ISPs. Well, I guess if they're pulling from a list of known search terms and stuff like that, yeah, it would be fairly easy to filter it out. Especially if enough of these scripts aren't doing a good enough job of randomization that they could just go, oh, 90% of the people loading these URLs are using a noise script. They could just filter those out of the logs, right?
Right.
So... in the end, it turns into a statistical game of cat and mouse between you and your ISP. Can they figure out how to separate the signal from the noise? Guilla wrote in an email thread with Ars and Smith, I think ISPs will have a lot more resources, money, and smart engineers who will be paid a lot to try to figure out how to do that. Way more resources than any individual or small open source project will. Maybe. It depends on how well you, how random you are and... you know,
I think it depends more on adoption. Like, this is cool. This is neat that he set that up. And sure, like, it'll work for him because he'll be one of the, you know, 50 people or whatever that might actually run it. But
yeah.
Until you get mass adoption to where you're actually starting to see numbers being skewed, they aren't going to do anything about it.
Yeah.
One thing that might work... you're just trying to anonymize what you do. Instead of just random clicks, join like an amalgamation of people. And instead of being random, I get Bob's search history the month after Bob searches. And then run that in the background of mine.
Well, you could do something like Freenet, right? Where you know, it you put together a network of people and, you know, your commands all come out of random other people's, you know, browsers, and their stuff comes out of yours. And again, you come back to that same problem of the free VPN we were talking about. Well, what happens when you have the one guy who's a pedophile who starts polluting everybody's browsing history, right? So,
right. Well, isn't it easier? I think it would be easier to just tunnel everything. If everything's in an encrypted tunnel, then it's your ISP isn't going to be able to see it anyways.
Doesn't Why have not to come just out encrypt somewhere? It all?
Well, yeah, but it's a VPN provider that's actually doing a good job of not keeping logs and stuff, then...
yeah.
And right now, the one that everybody seems to be recommending is private internet access, and from what I can tell, they're on the money, so... but, you know, that changes over time when these guys get big enough, or if they get the right kind of legal pressure, they can change, so...
yeah.
I'm just saying, right now, that one seems to be the one...
Just like the article said, it's not a cat and mouse game, but I just think it's a hell of a lot easier just encrypt all your traffic rather than trying to keep it unencrypted and try to fool the algorithms. Because like I said, I mean, sure, it'll work for you for a while, but I mean, you need mass adoption to make that work. And I don't think people are going to have a box at their house to run a Perl script that's going to go and crawl these sites for them. I mean, it obviously has to be something easy that any user could install in order to be adopted widely.
Well, on one hand, I tend to agree with you that you're not going to get most users to participate. But on the other hand, voluntarily having people run stupid shit has worked in the past. You know, low orbit ion cannon comes to mind. So,
I mean, yeah, I guess.
I don't know. I honestly tend to agree with you that most people wouldn't give enough of a shit to bother. But, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes. So,
yeah.
This next article comes from EthereumWorldNews.com. And, yeah. Members of the Freshwater Gang funded a mining operation and then shot the miner when they didn't get their money in time. Damn. Freshwater Gang members Gao Quitang and Chen Yumen shot a Bitcoin miner named Wu Nan when he failed to return their investment in his mining operation on time. The shooting took place on April 14th in New Taipei City after Gao and Chen raised $1.5 million. They raised $1.5 million. Two gangsters got together $1.5 million. So, okay. That's enough money you could have played real investment game. Well, I mean, cryptocurrency is real investing, but you didn't have to go Bitcoin. You could have done a lot of things with that kind of money for Wu's mining operation, expecting quick returns. Citing the Chinese ban on cryptocurrency exchanges and ICOs, Wu, nicknamed Milk. That's your nickname?
Milk? What kind of nickname is that? Yeah.
Was unable to return their investment on time. Liberty Times Net reports that the gangsters paid Wu a visit and approached him to demand their money. Following an argument, they drew their handguns, a Beretta and a Taurus, and fired at Wu 7 times. Wu was shot but survived the incident, although presumably still owes the Freshwater Gang over $1 million. Wu is one of many mining freelancers accepting seed capital to launch mining operations in Taiwan. China has announced plans to shut out Bitcoin mining on top of their ban on exchanges and ICOs, discussion of which may have led to a 20% crash in the crypto market when rumors of plans emerged, which Bitcoin's actually still way down compared to where it was. So it's like 7,500 now, which I think compared to this time last year is still up. But when we get into October, if it hasn't recovered yet, Bitcoin's going to start to look really bad, you know, because that's when it was going nuts last year. So, while bullish on blockchain, the Chinese government and central bank have taken multiple measures against cryptocurrency, citing concerns of investor risk, lack of oversight, and environmental concerns. China is citing environmental concerns. Really? Didn't we just catch them using CFCs again? I mean, I don't buy into most of the green pop sci bullshit. But there is some actual real things there with, you know, pumping way too much shit in the air. So, and they actually have screens to simulate the sunrise because it's so smoggy. I mean, you know, there's the crazier green bullshit. Then there's actual, like, okay, that's legitimate smog. That's, like, real problematic, you know, kill people pollution. Nobody wants that shit. Environmental concerns, China. It's sort of like North Korea complaining about, you know, humanitarian concerns. Anyways, where was I? China has relatively low electricity costs in many areas and is home to Bitmain, the manufacturer of the most popular Bitcoin mining hardware. As such, China houses the largest Bitcoin mining operations in the world, and the government is also planning to observe the effects of Bitcoin mining on the environment and infrastructure. Currently, Bitcoin mining uses as much of the electricity as the island of Ireland. God! And is set to use 0.05% of the world's electricity supply by the end of the year. Due to the crackdown, Bitmain has started moving offices abroad, receiving approval to purchase sites in the U.S. and Switzerland as nations with a low electricity cost and progressive regulations, respectively. The mining pool BTC.top also jumped ship and moved to Canada due to affordable electricity and more lenient government policies regarding Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. So, yeah, it's only tangentially related to Bitcoin mining. Really, just you probably shouldn't take investments from Taiwanese gangsters.
Right.
I'm kind of wondering why. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say. I think it speaks badly against the whole hassle of trying to get Bitcoin exchange back into money, needing an exchange and all that. Maybe the dude actually had the Bitcoin. He hid it. He just couldn't cash out.
That's entirely possible, actually. Although the costs of setting up a Bitcoin mining operation are pretty crazy in this, today.
Oh, I imagine.
Well, I mean, the hardware is stupid cooling. Expensive now, and in such limited supply that even the more low end Bitcoin mining, anything worth running, costs hundreds of thousands of dollars to get it in enough bulk to make the investment worth it. So, I mean, you can go on eBay and, find stuff that's two and three generations old still selling for, $1,000, several hundred dollars. If you're not...
I think you're right, though. The moral of the story is don't borrow money from Taiwanese gangsters.
Well, not just Taiwanese gangsters. I think gangsters in general are just not great people to borrow money from just because they tend to... they tend to be violent about it. Yeah. You borrow money from a credit card company, they damage your credit rating, maybe send you a nasty gram, bad phone call every once in a while. You borrow money from a gangster and they're not happy with it. You could serve as an example to others. So, granted, I think we've determined that's what some people's purpose in life is to be an example for others. But, I don't know that taking money from these people is the wisest course of action. So, although it's entirely possible, considering that they say he was trying to raise capital to build mining operations, I mean, is it possible he took money from them and didn't know who they were? Just a couple
of... 1.5 million. Yeah, he knew who they were.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
I tried.
No. Like,
who else is going to have that money?
I took a couple thousand from Bob. I didn't vet him because it was a couple thousand. Whenever you're showing up to my house, probably with a suitcase filled with $100 bills saying, I want to start Bitcoin mining and get some fried rice. I'm checking some things.
Oh, geez.
Hey, it's Taiwan. Everything's going to be a fucking combo. It's coming with fried rice and an egg roll and a Bitcoin miner.
So I was just wondering, they gathered $1.5 million for Bitcoin mining, but the handguns they were using were a Beretta and a Taurus. I mean, I'm thinking I like the Tauruses too, don't get me wrong. But I'm just thinking if you're raising $1.5 million, wouldn't you be walking around with
HKs at least, right? Something with some money.
Is it Kimber is what I'm thinking of? The 1911 that's Kimber. $5,000?
Yep.
And see, that's why you're not a millionaire. Bad investment advice. You get the tool that will do the job with the least amount of money.
Well, that's why I keep a high point in the car in case I have to throw it in the river, right? But I mean...
Yeah, I'm not going to miss that. That was 75 cents.
I mean, you buy a nice Glock, you put a lot of, add-ons into it or a nice 1911. You don't want to actually have to shoot somebody with the damn thing because then either you got to give it to the cops or hide it. And now you're out, $1,000 on a gun, whereas, a little Taurus, a little High Point, something costs a couple $100. If you got to turn that one into the cops or dump it in the river, at least you're not out a significant amount of money. you got to think about these things, right? So,
I'm still wondering why the hell would Taiwan care if China put a ban on Bitcoin exchanges?
Dude.
Taiwan considers itself a separate country. They don't abide by those laws.
But China doesn't. And they've invaded Taiwan once already, haven't they?
No, because if they do, guess what country gets to nuke China according to the treaty we have with Taiwan?
Oh, I thought they had already blockaded them and invade and you know, were fucking around with them already.
They attempt to mess with their trade some whenever our aircraft carriers aren't in the China Sea or near Taiwan. But no, they've never attempted a ground invasion because there's a U.S. military base there, I believe, and we're territorially obligated to defend them.
Then who? I'm thinking of somebody else then.
Up until Nixon's administration, we considered Taiwan the legitimate government of China.
No, I'm thinking of a different group that was absorbed by China then.
Tibet.
I'm thinking of Tibet? Okay.
Yeah, Tibet was absorbed by China, and no one cares.
Yeah.
Except for the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama cares. I don't care what the Dalai Lama cares about, so no one else cares either.
I don't know. He seems like a nice old man. So, anyways.
Could be. He also might be a nice young man by now. I don't know if the last one's dead yet or not.
Let's,
Point.
I don't want to be...
That's the wrong sound effect. Two things for you tonight in Digital Dojo. The first is an article in Linux Journal, which is just detailing some privacy plugins that you can use in your web browser to help out with the privacy while you're web browsing, since, you know, between GDPR and everything else going on and Facebook. You know, so they kind of go into Privacy Badger, HTTPS Everywhere. I mean, uBlock Origin and NoScript. So it's kind of a basic primer, especially if you've been listening to the show any length of time, because I think I've already covered most of these plugins. But it's a nice write-up, so it's worth bringing out. And, you know, it's a bit wordy, honestly. But if you're new to it, if you're new to this, it's not bad to get an explanation of why you want to think about running some of these plugins. And the... second thing I have is an article in GHacks on how to pretend you're from the EU so you can benefit from the GDPR. So,
well, that's cool.
Yeah, the Trans-Europa Express is a brand new extension for Firefox web browser that pretends that the internet users are from the European Union to give them some of the privacy protections that websites give users from the EU. The GDPR attempts to improve privacy of users from the European Union and European Economic Area. Sites, for example, are required to get consent from users for various data collection practices. Most sites and companies have implemented functionality for the users of EU only. If you visit a site from outside the EU, you may not even notice a change. One way to overcome this is to use a VPN connection to a European server. This would reveal an IP address from the EU, which would give users more control over their privacy, provided the website in question implemented the functionality and just does not simply block people from the EU outright. The Trans-Europa Express is a new extension for Firefox that uses as an alternative. It tries to convince websites and services that you are from the EU, even though you may not be from it, by setting Google AdSense advertisements to non-personalized mode. It tries to detect special scripts that websites may use to give European users control over privacy settings, and if it finds such a script, it attempts to enact it to enable the European-style protections. The extension detects Google tags in Google tag instances only right now and attempts to set them to non-personalized advertisements when it discovers them on sites. It should be clear the method is not as effective as using a VPN, as it forces as it focuses on Google's method exclusively right now and won't catch other scripts. So it's, you know, it's still kind of in beginning stages, but I love the concept.
Heck yeah, me too. Speaking of this, I saw it on Twitter, one of the security people, I forget who I follow anyways, went, used a VPN, changed his IP address. First off, went to a website. I forget which one it was. It's not important. But, like, the total traffic transferred between His computer in this website was like 5 megs coming from a US IP address. Turned on the VPN, goes from an exit node that's inside the EU somewhere, goes to the same exact website. It's like 500K worth of traffic.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
how much bullshit ads and scripts and all that other shit the difference was.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it one bit.
Yeah. So if you're on your phone and want to save some bandwidth.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
Use a VPN. Freaking come from the EU.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, you know, we've been having to buy new computers for decades now for websites that largely haven't changed. Yet if you go pull that old, you know, P4 or older Athlon out of the closet, boot it up and try to run it, I mean, what's really changed in a Windows desktop? Not that much. But you load up a modern Windows on an older machine, it's going to chug. Now, RAM is something, but it's like, what the hell is running in the background that of these machines that's chewing up so much space? And a lot of it's the tracking. A lot of it's also that, yeah. you know, modern interfaces want, you know, 3D accelerated cards, and most older machines don't actually have that. They have some Intel bullshit that barely works. Actually, I've got some newer machines that have that, and they're kind of painful. Anyways, so, you know, it's just, I don't doubt it one bit.
Yeah.
So.
It was a dramatic difference, though.
Well, I mean, hell, RU was showing us a website he uses that strips Reddit down to the very basis level, and it's like it's just text, right? And, you know,
that makes sense.
You think about it, back in the day, you used to be able to use a pure text web browser from a Linux terminal and be fairly effective.
Right.
You know, today, most websites, if you don't have JavaScript and images, they, you know, you can't even use them. They don't even load right. So,
yeah.
I mean, I don't think that it's that websites are doing that much more that's useful. I think it's just bloat, poorly designed systems, JavaScript being the big thing, and all the fucking tracking.
Yeah. Or there's the evolution of things where, you know, we programmers used to have 8K worth of memory to work with, so that everything had to be streamlined. Well, now we've got 32 gigs in a regular desktop system. They're like, meh, why the fuck would I care about, you know,
Cycros is calling me out on it. He said, there is a CLI Reddit client. Use that. Well, I might. The new design of that site is god-awful. It's like, who the hell thought that was a good idea? Well, yeah, that's what I've been doing, is just putting old dot in front of it. But, I mean, still, it's like, who the hell thought that was a good idea? So,
yeah,
it's like, we want to look like Facebook. No, that's why the website was good, is it didn't look like that.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's all I've got. Of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and the subreddit are probably the best way to hashtag fuck beta. I in the IRC, hashtag fuck beta. I mean,
yeah.
I'm not, I guess, is that what we're saying about the new Reddit? So I don't know. I just. a bunch of the articles were about how Reddit's now the third largest website on the internet, or third most visited website on the internet today. So I guess YouTube would be number one. The big thing about Reddit was that they passed up Facebook. So what's number two, Twitter?
I was thinking Google.com had to be number one, but maybe you're right, it's YouTube? I don't know.
I thought YouTube was the most visited website on the internet now.
Hmm.
They could be profitable finally.
Yeah, right.
We're into Wikipedia, Google number one, YouTube number two. This must be old because it says Facebook number three.
Yeah, that's why. Well, that's what all the articles were going on about, how Reddit had taken the number three spot from Facebook. So I guess so the other two probably didn't change. It's probably Google, then YouTube, then
YouTube.
That would make
Reddit.
Sense, especially since every web browser in the world loads Google as the default page unless you fix it. So.
What the hell is Baidu.com? That's number four.
Baidu is
Wikipedia,
the Japanese. I'm sorry, is the Chinese version of Google. So, you know how China makes every country or any company that goes over there partner with a local? If I remember right, Baidu partnered with Google before they kicked Google out. So, yeah, Chinese. Okay. What did I say? Did I say something else? I may have said something else. I've been drinking, and I've had a rough week. Sard heard me ranting earlier, so.
Crazy.
So, anyways, that's all I got. Sard, closing thoughts.
Madman loves gay frogs.
Madman rebuttal?
Sucked my balls?
Well, that is what you would expect a gay frog to do, isn't it? So,
more of a tongue action with a gay frog than the sucking, but they don't really have lips, but they have tongue for miles.
All right. That's all I got. Madman, did you have a real closing thoughts, or are we just done?
I'm going to go over there done on that one.
All right. I think it's time to play the Pac-Man sound and stop recording before this gets any worse.